You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled Chicago Bears rookie analysis with a late-breaking wave of post-draft free agent signings. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I cover the Chicago Bears for BearsWire. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today, we were going to continue breaking down this Chicago Bears draft class, but instead, Ryan Pace added some new veteran free agents to his roster at some pretty key positions, so I'll be joined by Ross Jackson from Locked On Saints to break down how wide receiver Ted Ginn will fit in this Bears offense, but we'll also look at safety Tashawn Gibson, defensive lineman John Jenkins, and wide receiver Trevor Davis. General manager Ryan Pace decided not to take a safety in the 2020 NFL draft, and on Thursday, he revealed his backup plan, signing free agent safety Tashawn Gibson, most recently of the Houston Texans. Now, prior to that, Gibson had spent a few seasons with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and before that, he was with the Cleveland Browns, where he was teammates with Bears slot cornerback Buster Skrine, and on the same sidelines as the Bears special teams coach, Chris Tabor. He's been a fairly consistent starter for about the last seven seasons across those three teams, but his last two stops haven't necessarily ended exactly how he would have wanted. Houston released him after just 1 year on a contract they signed last year, a three-year $22.5 million deal, and prior to that, the Jaguars had cut him 3 years into a five-year contract he had in Jacksonville. So there's a reason he's still available at the start of May, really, when the Bears are able to sign him. This was not a top-notch free agent safety that was quickly scooped up on the open market. He lasted this long for a reason. That's because he's had a little bit more struggles over the last few seasons than he did earlier in his career. Now, he's still only 29 years old. He turns 30 in August, so he'll be effectively 30 for this 2020 season. But it's not as though he is so far over the hump in terms of NFL players being past their prime. And when I look back at his 2019 season in Houston, he battled a lot of injuries. He still played and started in 14 games, but he was on the injury report with hip, wrist, and back injuries. And to some extent, I'm willing to blame some of his poor performances on not being 100% healthy. And it's encouraging from an availability standpoint that he's a player who will play through that, even if it does affect his performance. But again, it all sort of adds up to why he was available at this time. And he's obviously not going to be a top dollar free agent spending at this point. So I think he comes into Chicago, yes, as the favorite to start at this point over Deion Bush at safety next to Eddie Jackson. But I wouldn't necessarily set it in stone. I don't think his contract is going to have a lot of guaranteed money that really locks him in to that starting spot. If, for whatever reason, Deion Bush is ready and can win that preseason competition, I wouldn't 100% rule it out, but Gibson obviously comes in with a Pro Bowl appearance earlier in his career and over 100 starts in the NFL. So very clearly a player who can help out this team. And I look back at how he's been used in Houston and Jacksonville, and he was a guy that's versatile. You know, he's, what, 6'1", 212 pounds, and his defenses have really found use for him at both free and strong safety roles. Seems like in both spots, he was used almost as close to 50-50 as a deep safety and a box safety as you could throughout the season. It seemed like Jacksonville and Houston wanted to be multiple with their defense and not feel like one safety had to be in the box all the time and one safety was going to be the deep free safety. So there's some flexibility for Chuck Pagano there, but given that Gibson can function fine at strong safety, I wonder if he would be more inclined to use him more so in that role as a higher percentage of his snaps than he has been at previous teams, just so Eddie Jackson can play more of that free safety role. That was one of the concerns with HaHa Clinton-Dix. It didn't ultimately make Eddie Jackson bad by any means, but not quite the stellar season compared to what he was able to do in 2018. So it'll be interesting to see how exactly Gibson gets utilized. I can only imagine the versatility gives Chuck Pagano more options to work with, and it's a matter of putting your players in the best position to be successful, but also not wanting to be too predictable with Jackson always being a deep safety. So I think he can get creative a little bit with Gibson potentially at that other spot, whereas Deion Bush maybe you wouldn't quite have as much faith in having to drop back as the deep safety. But it's clear that Ryan Pace still saw that position as a need, still knew he had this option in his back pocket and could go in the draft and maybe take a safety if the right one was on the board, but feel like, you know what, we can pass on him. We can draft a tight end and a cornerback in the second round instead and still land somebody like Gibson in free agency. And it's late enough that none of these new signings will count against the compensatory pick formula for the next draft. That's why he waited so long to make this little flurry of moves. And it's a solid combination of veteran, experienced players that should have a good shot of contributing in 2020. Up next on the podcast, we'll talk to Ross Jackson from Locked On Saints about what Ted Ginn can still offer, even as he's approaching 13 seasons in the NFL, and then we'll wrap up looking at where Trevor Davis and John Jenkins might also fit in the mix. Keep it locked, right here on Locked On Bears. Ryan Pace delivered some veteran consistency late here in the free agent process, and if you're looking for some consistent delivery in your life, you'll want to download the Postmates app. I love Postmates, and especially now during these quarantine times, because I can get my food delivered to me without leaving the house or even opening the door, because Postmates now has non-contact deliveries, so I can order from my favorite local restaurants and get all my food left right outside my door. And Postmates doesn't just deliver your burgers and fries. They make my life so much easier by picking up the things I need from Walgreens and convenience stores and dropping it right off outside of my door. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving Locked On Bears listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the Postmates app and use the promo code LOCKEDONNFL. That's code LOCKEDONNFL for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Joining us now on the Locked On Bears podcast is Ross Jackson. He is, of course, the host of Locked On Saints here on the Locked On Podcast Network. But you can also read his Saints analysis over at Canal Street Chronicles with SB Nation. Ross, I appreciate you taking the time and joining us on a pretty short notice here with the Ted Ginn signing just happening Thursday afternoon. How is things going for you over in Saints world?
Thank you very much, first of all, for letting me come on and chat with you a little bit, Lauren. Always a pleasure to talk with you. And, you know, I mean, we had a pretty wild weekend here, of course, between, the four-person draft that was nearly only a three-person draft, a nice undrafted free agent class, and then, of course, sort of the cherry on top in Jameis Winston signing in New Orleans. So you can imagine we're staying pretty busy over here.
Yeah, welcome to the quarterback carousel of the offseason. I mean, I know you had Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater be fairly figured out early enough, but it's been interesting to see how the Saints roster has gone through some changes this year, including at the wide receiver position. Gone is Ted Ginn Jr. now coming to Chicago on Thursday, and Emmanuel Sanders replacing him in New Orleans. But in terms of what Ginn did in that offense last season, I know he was sort of like, you know, number two in terms of snaps played last season, but would you categorize his role in that offense truly as a number two receiver, or how, what was sort of the dynamic with him and Michael Thomas?
Yeah, so he was definitely characterized sort of as wide receiver two in terms of his play style, right? He played opposite Michael Thomas on the outside, sort of in the Z position. And so that was something that he very much was a part of, and that he was, a big part of what that was for the Saints game plan. However, just unfortunately didn't get an opportunity to really get very involved in the offense. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, for the last couple of years, at least, the number two receiver in New Orleans has been running back Alvin Kamara. And so, you know, he got his lion's share, you know, a third year straight with 81 receptions. They also added Jared Cook last season. And then, of course, the sort of onslaught that comes with Taysom Hill over on the offensive side as well, just sort of put Ted Ginn Jr. in a position to where he didn't really have an opportunity to make much for himself in New Orleans. He had some struggles as well, and it has just as much to do with, you know, the game plan that he was a part of and what he was asked to do as it does with his own ability. He showed up in New Orleans in 2017 and then raked in over 72% of his catches, but ever since then has sort of fallen off a little bit for New Orleans. His drop rate has increased, his completion percentage when targeted has dropped, but you know, he was still very much a big part of this team, understanding, you know, what the game plan was, getting involved in the run game as well. He had 30 receptions with the Saints last season, which is well behind the 149 that Michael Thomas put up. But as you can imagine, when you've got a guy catching 149 passes opposite you, there's not a lot of opportunity for you to really get your shine on in the Saints offense.
Yeah, I can imagine he's always going to be, I would say second fiddle, but it feels more like third with everything else going on there. I'm glad you mentioned the drop passes, because mm-hmm. I was going to ask about that. That's long been an issue for him through his career. So safe to say that that is continuing. But in terms of his skill set, I mean, obviously he's known as a speedster and a deep ball receiver. He's now, I think, what, entering year 14 in the NFL? It's been at least 13 mm-hmm. across the league. He's lost a step, but how much of a step would you say he's lost? How much does he still threaten defenses vertically?
Oh, he's absolutely 100% still a field stretcher. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And oftentimes when he's on the field, he's one of, if not the fastest person on the field, you know, on game day. And that's something that I think he's going to pack in his game until he retires. And it might be, you know, that might be the reason that he retires, is when he feels like he loses that step. But certainly he's, you know, not where he was when he came into the league. You know, you can look back at the Carolina Panthers days, you can go back even further to the Miami Dolphins days, but even still, he's still oftentimes the fastest guy on the field. And so you love that about him. You know, one of the things that he really struggled with the Saints this past season, along with those drops, was creating separation. But really, every Saints receiver struggled with creating separation this year. So it could be just as much about the coaching in that instance, as well as game planning and the usage of route combinations and, you know, what was familiar to defenses and things like that, that could have actually factored into that as much as, you know, individual skill. And so, you know, you look at him and you might sit back and say, ah, well, he didn't create a lot of separation last year with his speed. That can have just as much with the fact that, look, the Saints can't push the ball down the field the way that, you know, Drew Brees, for instance, can't push the ball down the field the way that maybe a Nick Foles or a Mitch Trubisky, who have stronger arms, might be able to. And so I think that that will put Ted Ginn Jr. in a better situation in which he can utilize that speed to create that separation for himself.
That was going to be my next question in terms of quarterbacks being able to push the ball down the field. Neither one of those in mm-hmm. New Orleans really, at least not anymore for Drew Brees. He could once upon a time, but I mean, he still had some deep shots in there. So in terms of like when he was open and working downfield like that, is it about him sort of running underneath it and coming to it? Or how did those shots look in the Saints offense, given some arm strength and downfield limitations in scheme from the New Orleans offense?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And just as much of those downfield misses have to do with the quarterback play. I mean, you saw a few of those passes come underthrown, even when Taysom Hill was the guy throwing them on, I think, one or two occasions. You saw those passes come underthrown. There's only so much you can ask of your receiver to go back toward a defender and try to make a play on the ball. Ted Ginn Jr. is not a contested catch guy. That's not his thing. He's not a face catcher. I've created 3 foot of separation for my receiver with my speed, and now I need you to hit me in stride, which is not a bad thing at all. It's part of, you know, one of the many different styles that you use to complement one another in terms of the way that you build your wide receivers or you build your receiving core. And the other thing that's really nice about him too is his in-breaking routes. He still does a very good job with those. That's probably where he created the most separation with the Saints, is any of those ins, those slants, any posts, things like that, to where the Saints were able to catch him, maybe catch a defense sleeping, maybe in an, you know, a middle of the field open type of a look, a cover two or a cover four, and then be able to hit him down the field at an angle to where it was just a little bit less for maybe Drew Brees to have to, a little bit less air to have to put under the ball. You saw Teddy Bridgewater hit him on one of those against Tampa Bay when Teddy Bridgewater threw for multiple touchdowns in that game. And he's notoriously somebody that doesn't push the ball down the field, as Chicago Bears fans are very accustomed to and very much aware of. So, you know, those in-breaking routes are definitely a place where you can create some separation for him without having to just send him on a nine every time. But, you know, he'll have a little bit more opportunity
opportunity now as just being able to create separation down the field in a straight line and utilizing that straight line speed in Chicago than he was able to do in New Orleans.
Well, Ross, you keep beating me to my questions and answering them ahead of time for me. Even those in-breaking routes, it's a great observation because I pulled up the Pro Football Focus charting on his routes and his two touchdowns this season, and one's on an in route and one was on a post route last year. So very astute, even without the numbers right there in front of you. And that's why I'm so glad you're able to join us here on the podcast and why I can't wait to pick your brain just a little bit more about Ted Ginn Jr. next on Locked On Bears. We're talking with Ross Jackson from Locked On Saints about new Chicago Bears wide receiver Ted Ginn. So, Ross, any other general takeaways from Ted Ginn? Anything you'll remember in particular? Or I guess, you know, as far as him running the ball, or was he involved in some trick plays? I mean, could you give me your eulogy of Ted Ginn's time in New Orleans?
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely somebody that allows you to open up your playbook a bit because he has, you know, a little bit of a multitude in terms of what he can do as a receiver. You know, where you're going to hit him for the big plays is always going to be down the field for certain. He's not a huge guy at this point in his career. You're not going to hit him on a slant and watch him turn it up the field with some run after catch, making some guys miss. That's not really part of his game anymore. But if he's got green grass in front of him, he'll be able to eat it up pretty quickly. So you could see him still get involved in the yards after catch game, just not necessarily in a situation where he has to create for himself at this point in his career. The other part that you'll be able to see is him be able to get involved a little bit more in the end around jet sweep game as well, sort of help to open that up. And, you know, with Patterson, the Chicago Bears are very accustomed to being able to, or their time with Patterson, custom be able to, you know, work that into their game plan. So you can expect to see a little bit of that with Ted Ginn Jr. And also you could just expect to see a great locker room guy. The Bears already have one of the better locker rooms in the NFL. And Ted Ginn Jr. is just going to fit right in with that and just be one of those team guys that's going to be able to do a little bit of everything to be able to help his team win. So he's a great player, and you know, you'll definitely always hear about the drops and everything, but you know, his first year in New Orleans, he really showed something that he can, with some accurate passing and some accurate targets from his quarterback, be able to, you know, he's able to sort of erase that part of his game and get a little bit better there in terms of the hands game. And so you hope to be able to see that for him his first year in Chicago as well, or his year in Chicago as well. You know that it's in there. It's just about getting it out of him.
And one last thing that reminded me of, early in his career, he was a pretty well-known kick return guy. I know he did a little bit of that early on in New Orleans, and then since then they've kind of opted for like Deontay Harris and some other guys. Is that just Harris being particularly good there, or is Ginn, was it not something they wanted Ginn to do, or does he not have enough juice left, or what went into him sort of leaving that role?
Yeah, actually, great question. Ted Ginn Jr. was pretty much still the return guy up until Deontay Harris showed up on this team and came in as an undrafted free agent out of Assumption College. He, of course, was the all NCAA touchdown leader in terms of return touchdowns, both combined kick and punt return. So it just was a huge part of his game. The Saints special teams coordinator, Darren Rizzi, it famously stood on a table and yelled at everyone during the draft that they needed to draft Deontay Harris, and then ended up having to wait until free agency. Didn't get his way, but thankfully the guy still showed up in New Orleans. And so that was something that you knew once Deontay Harris's name became a part of the New Orleans Saints roster, that was going to be his role. But you saw Ted Ginn Jr. still get available, or still get involved and folded in into the return game, because they were trying to keep Alvin Kamara away from doing it, because you know, you just wanted to keep him, you wanted to get the ball in Alvin Kamara's hand, but you wanted to keep him away from those high volume collisions that you can catch in the return game. They wanted to keep him healthy and keep him safe. And so you still saw Ted Ginn Jr. get involved in that. He was back there as well with Taysom Hill when they started getting Taysom Hill involved in kick returns. And the one thing that's really nice about Ted Ginn Jr. and is kind of antithetical to the things that we've talked about is that he's a sure hands punt fielder. I mean, that's just one of the things that he does. So it's kind of antithetical because we're talking about his drops and things like that. But you see him be the guy that whenever the offense is pinned, whenever the offense has advanced a little bit further and the return team knows they're going to be pinned back, sometimes you'll see Ted Ginn Jr. back there as the fair catch guy, because he has the sure hands in that area of the game.
Well, I didn't think it was possible to go this in-depth on Ted Ginn Jr., but that's why we bring in you, Ross, to get that kind of analysis from Locked On Saints. Let everybody know where else they can find your work on Twitter and what kind of Saints coverage they can expect from you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks as much again for having me come on to chat about this guy. I really like him, and I'm glad that he's found a nice home. I was kind of interested to see if he was going to end up back in New Orleans, because the Saints sort of mantra this offseason has been all about familiarity and cohesion. But I'm glad that if not with New Orleans, that he found a nice home somewhere in Chicago, and I'm excited to see what they're able to do with him for certain and what works out for him. But if you're interested, you can come and follow me over on Twitter at Ross Jackson Nola, N-O-L-A. Of course, you can check out the Locked On Saints podcast. You can catch all the write-ups as well over at Canal Street Chronicles, brought to you by SB Nation. Lauren, thanks so much again for having me on, man. Appreciate having me on. And thanks for all the great work that you do, man. Always fun to be able to chop it up with you.
Hey, it's my pleasure. And it's part of the magic of the Locked On Podcast Network, being able to do some great stuff like this. So lots of fun, and really appreciate it, Ross.
Absolutely, man. Look forward to next time.
So in addition to Tashaun Gibson and Ted Ginn Jr., Ryan Pace also signed wide receiver Trevor Davis and defensive lineman John Jenkins. And Davis was the first of the free agent signings announced, so it made more sense at the time, given that he's been a kick return option for the Green Bay Packers, albeit with varying degrees of success. There was some room for him to potentially come in here and be a special teams contributor. I know last season he had spent time in Green Bay, Miami, and Oakland, so bouncing around a little bit and definitely more of an end of the roster type option. So made sense to add another veteran body into that room until Ted Ginn comes in, and now it doesn't feel like Trevor Davis has much chance at all of sticking on this 53-man roster. But at the very least, it's another body in there, somebody with a little bit more experience in a wide receiver room that's more or less lacking it outside of Allen Robinson. It's a similar situation for John Jenkins on the defensive line, coming in to provide some veteran depth with a bench group a little bit more so on the younger side. Jenkins about to turn 31 in July. You may remember him from his time with the Chicago Bears in 2017. I think he appeared in like 8 games and didn't end up making that much of an impact as more of a, you know, the 5th or 6th defensive lineman in the rotation there in the last season of John Fox. Since then, he spent time with the New York Giants and Miami Dolphins, still really in this rotational at best role. And I think he's far from guaranteed a spot on this Bears 53-man roster, but you figure he plugs in there, you know, off the bench. You still have your lineup of Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, and Bilal Nichols, and then they spent a lot of money on Roy Robertson-Harris as a restricted free agent, so he's locked into that fourth spot. And then it's sort of a question of John Jenkins, the other veteran, Brent Urban, and then the former undrafted free agent, Abdullah Anderson, all sort of in the mix for that fifth and sixth defensive lineman spot. The Bears lost Nick Williams this offseason, so Jenkins could kind of slide into that backup nose tackle role. But again, Brent Urban can maybe fill some of that, or if Abdullah Anderson keeps taking some steps forward, it just gives them another option for that defensive line and another veteran with some experience not only in Chicago but in a variety of different defenses to add another voice into that room and add some depth where maybe they could have used a little more of it. Overall, I think it's very smart general managing by Ryan Pace in terms of filling in the last few little depth holes here and there. Getting a potential starting safety at the beginning of May is also a great find, especially when it's not going to count against your compensatory pick formula as well. So I think this is filling some needs. It's always more important to fill those needs in free agency and try and draft best player available when you can with those draft picks, because draft picks are usually unlikely to make those big-time contributions as a rookie. So that's where these free agents can kind of come in and, like I said, fill in some of those cracks and be that immediate boost to help push this team back toward the playoffs. None of them are guaranteed to have big-time impacts, but they all seem to have a lot of logic behind it and some potential opportunities to be a nice late off-season steal. So I want to thank Ross Jackson from Locked On Saints one more time for joining us to really go in depth on Ted Ginn. I tried to get in touch with our friends at Locked On Texans to go in depth on Tashaun Gibson, but trying to coordinate it like Thursday afternoon, the signing comes in and trying to say, hey, you got some free time tonight in the next 3 or 4 hours. It's not always that easy for everybody to bend their schedules around, but Ross Jackson happened to have a little window we could come in and do a little podcast recording. So glad we were able to get another outside voice and some really in-depth local analysis from our very own Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoyed our conversation, I hope you'll subscribe to the Locked On Bears podcast to make sure that you're keeping up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis.
Next week, we'll pick back up on breaking down this Bears rookie draft class, looking at more of the later round guys after we already went through Cole Kmet and Jalon Johnson this week. But I still want to go a little bit more in depth on Trevis Gibson, the other Gibson. Bears now have two Gibsons, the only two Gibsons active in the NFL. So that's going to be fun to juggle with name-wise all season. But also Kendall Vildor and Darnell Mooney and even the seventh round offensive lineman. Try and find out a little bit more about if there's any shot for those guys to pan out and reach some of their potential. So no shortage of Chicago Bears talk for you this offseason, especially in a time with not a lot of other sports available because of everything else going on in the world. I'm happy to be able to provide a little bit of an escape and a little bit of a break for you from the rest of everything else going on. I hope it's enjoyable. I hope it's a little bit of what you're craving this type of year. And I hope you're still able to bear down.